Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Hare Krishna.
My humble obeisances, all glories to Srila Prabhupada.
Jai Nitai, Jai Nitai.
We are going to continue with questions, right, Maharaj?
Yes. One thing was yesterday is our resident polytheist here. They're
Basically.
online yet or not?
Not everybody, they're joining one by one.
But I mean, yesterday the devotee who asked the question about why there's one source and not many.
She's not online yet.
Oh, okay. Maybe didn't like the answer.
No. She liked very much.
Okay, so then we can continue with questions because there was just another point to that question yesterday that might make it more clear. So we'll continue with some other question first then.
Krishnamala, we had Krishnamala question yesterday, and we can start with her, then continue with questions.
Okay.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, please accept my humble obeisances. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
Jai.
My question is, how can we take responsibility for our bad deeds or unwanted qualities without identifying ourselves with them?
See, the point is just like, let's say you're cooking in the kitchen, and let's say you're cutting up a potato. You guys are into potatoes, right? Or not?
Yes,
So,
we are.
so not better, I say, eggplant or something, or
Both are
both
okay.
are good. Both are good. Okay. So now you're cutting up this potato. So do you have to identify with that to do it? No. So that means you don't have to identify with anything to be able to perform the activity, right? But you can tell what's a good way to do something or not, right? Because the point is you're trying to do something correctly, right? So then let's say you're cutting and you're not getting a good shape. The some are big, some are small, and it's not straight like this. So then it's just a matter of observing what is appropriate for what you're doing and just adjusting it.
Adapting.
Right? You don't have to roll on the ground and beat your chest and say, "Oh, I'm such a useless potato cutter. I cut potatoes crooked and all that." No, all you have to do is go, "Okay, it's crooked. It should be straight," and make it straight and haribol. No? Yeah, so that's the whole point is we do not have to identify with the body and mind to be able to use them. Right? They're not us. So we don't have to identify with them to use them. And you find people that identify with it, they generally have a little bit more problem. Like you can drive your car very nicely without identifying with the car. But you see those people that identify with the car, they have a lot of problem. Right? So it's not a matter of driving, it's a matter of how you're interacting with them personally in your driving. So they get disturbed easier, angry easier, and anxiety easier. Right? So that's all. So it's just a matter of there's this, push nowadays, it's about us and make it about yourself and do what you want to do and everything. So all that's happening in the modern culture, they're trying to get you more and more to identify with the body, and it's about yourself. It's self-centered, so it's anamoya. It's the lowest level of consciousness. But they're very comfortable with being so-called civilized and scientific and into art and all these things. But they don't want to raise the consciousness that it's actually about morality or about God or about understanding who we are as the soul, or about having devotion to the Lord. So they'll push the point of, We don't have to worry about authority. We don't have to worry about tradition. We don't have to worry about religion. But they want to present themselves as civilized and scientific and advanced in technology, as if they're superior. It just makes them better animals, that's all. Pigs in suits. So that's the whole thing, is they're trying to distract you from things by creating their own sense of morality. But this morality is not about the benefit of others, it's for the benefit of themselves. So it's not actually morality. Does that make sense? So, in other words, we don't have to identify with the body to use it. We just know what it is and use it appropriately. Does that make sense?
Yes, Maharaj, it makes very much sense. Just that if we have envy, or if we have some kind of pride or anger, then we should also take responsibility for this kind of emotion, because they disturb the people even in on the level of mind, even if we don't express ourselves or even if we don't behave on them. So how we should be dealing with them, like in a way, should we consider them like as our naughty children that we should be taking care of?
The point is that, is it something that's worth doing or not? Is it valuable or not? Right? So since they're not of value, then why be involved? Right? Does that make sense? You know, you don't have to get involved in all these kind of things. You know, you may personally have some technique by which it makes it easier to not identify or this, but you have to understand that's not the process. That's just something that you may personally use because it works for you, but that's all right. But as soon as you start recommending that others should do this, or they must do this, or this is the devotional process, at that point you'll have problem. By forgetting Krishna, that's why these things come up. By remembering Krishna, these things go away. Right? Because otherwise, if you make them as children, so then here, lust, anger, greed, envy, attachment, and illusion, these are your kids, that's a problem. And then, if it's your kids, that means they're doing the nonsense, not you. But we're doing the nonsense. So therefore, you no need to extend it that they're kids. You know, why kids? They could be, you know, armadillos, or they could be, polar bears, or, you know what I'm saying? So the point is why go to that? We're the one making the mistake by forgetting Krishna. Therefore, these things come up. Just like, let's say you're walking through your living room, but you have the lights off. It's completely dark. There'll be problems. Now, what's the solution? Turn on the light. No problem. Is that okay?
Yes, thank you very much.
You know, I mean, there's enough problem with children, let alone that they're lust, anger, greed, envy, attack, like that, yeah.
Thank you very much. Yashiva Priya Matiji has a question. Can I ask, Maharaj?
Yes, please.
Could you help me understand if I am thinking correctly? The Karana Sharira is a kind of storage in which all the samskaras from past lives are stored. And at the same time, it is one of the shariras that cover the soul. When we are saying Chato Darpana Marjanam, do we mean this Karana Sharira? Thank you.
Technically, all the impressions of that are going to be stored in the Linga Sharira. Because the Linga Sharira is going to be the mind, intelligence, and false ego. Right? But the Karana Sharira is going to be that mentality that I'm the controller and enjoyer. So, because I'm the controller and enjoyer is not dependent upon the situations around you. Right? Even someone going for liberation, they don't have the gross or subtle body, but they still think, I'm God, I'm the enjoyer. So, therefore, is that when the consciousness becomes polluted, then we identify with matter, so the consciousness becomes polluted. Now, what specific matter we want to enjoy and control, That's then what creates the impressions. So that's why we see is you have weakness of heart, and you have the asat trishna. Means the weakness of heart will be that there is a specific inclination towards particular items of enjoyment, and asat trishna just means you have a taste for material enjoyment. Like, for example, someone really likes to eat, but within that context of eating, they like to eat particular things. So those particular things will create the impression, right? Like another person who also likes to eat, what they think about is different food. So in other words, the karana sharira is just the envy and, envy towards Krishna, and attachment to the idea, I'm the enjoyer. So, I and mine. That's your basis. That's the mundane consciousness. Then, when that takes on a specific physical identity, when it takes on, analyzing the situation, that becomes the intelligence. When it comes in contact with the senses, that becomes the mind. And then the gross body manifests around that. So specifically, impressions are stored in the memory, which is part of intelligence. Does that make sense? Does that work? Yeah? Okay. Very good. Hare Krishna.
So Satvik Prabhu has a question, am I right?
Okay.
Question is, we know that Paramatma is controlling everything, but till what point is Paramatma controlling the things? And from where is the control of the jiva starting, and where is it ending?
And when he's saying control, what does he mean by control?
So his question is based on the Shastra, that it is said in the Shastras, that the Paramatma is controlling our senses, and he is the controller. So his question is, to what degree is this control reaching? And when we are doing any action or some activity, how is the Paramatma guiding us or directing us, to what degree? And how free are we? And what is the degree of our freedom?
So in other words, the question is, how free are we? Let us say, you go into a gym. And in the gym, there's so many machines. You know, one's for running, one's for pulling things up, one's for lifting, all these different varieties. Well-designed gym. So, let's say you go on the treadmill. Do you make the treadmill work? It means, as a jiva, are you controlling the electricity, the wheels turning, the little gears, all the little things? When you push the button, it makes the electricity go here. Are you controlling that? No. Means, can you use something else than what is in the gym? Cook lunch. No, but the gym is very well outfitted. Whatever is there, whatever a gymnast would want, everything is there. And so you have the freedom, you have an interest in the gym, you have a freedom to use all the different machines that are in the gym, but you don't actually have control the choices, and you don't really control, what are the options available, and you don't control how they work. But no one asks the question, how free am I in the gym? You come into the gym, you use this machine, that machine, you have your routine. And so you feel that you're doing what you want. Sometimes there's an obstacle because all the treadmills are busy, so then you go over and lift some weights. And then the treadmill's free, then you use it. So the whole point is at every moment you have free will, but at the same time is the options, those are controlled by the Lord. And whatever option you choose and how you operate it, that's going to give you a particular result. you put the treadmill on very fast, but you run slow or you run backwards, who's going to have the problem? Right? You'll have the problem. Machine has no problem. The person next to you has no problem. Or you put it really slow and you run fast. So it means the machine is there. It works in a particular way. According to the way that machine works, you operate it. You know, you have the intelligence, you have the knowledge, and you operate it properly, you get good results. But the good results come from using the machine, how the machine has to be used. And so therefore, you use the machine how it's supposed to be used, you get a good result. You use the machine not how it's supposed to be used, you get a bad result. Not only that, the person in charge of the gym may tell you, you can't come here, or you can't use that machine, right? You can sit over on the side and eat, drink your protein shake. Does this make sense? So you always have freedom, but according to how you use that freedom, you get a result. You can't say freedom means doing whatever I want and getting the result that I think I should get. No, that's not freedom. That's impersonalism. Because the point is you're a person, you're an individual, you have a nature. Everybody else is an individual, they have a nature. So you have to work what is appropriate for you in the position you are in the relationship to others, then you get a proper result. If you only care about yourself, then you don't get the result. Does that make sense?
Yes, Maharaj, thank you very much.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
So in other words, all the good that you're getting, that's because of your work. And all the bad you're getting, that's because of your work. It's not Krishna's fault.
Maharaj, the lady who asked the question about these many sources, she has joined us, if you would
like. Okay. Yes, yes. Okay. So on another point that's there, that when we're dealing that there's many origins of energy, is that that idea comes to us because of, in the material world, that's how it has to work. Because in the material world, opposites don't reconcile, right? So therefore, you have to have separate sources. But in the spiritual world, then Krishna has the Achintya Shakti, which is the inconceivable potency. Therefore, all these opposites reconcile in him. He's unborn, but he appears in the family of the Yadu dynasty. He's a person, but he expands everywhere, unlimitedly throughout the cosmos. Right? He's bigger than the biggest, smaller than the smallest, but he has a very perfect medium-sized form. You know, he has unlimited qualities, but he, in his feature as Brahman, then you don't see any distinction of qualities. You understand? So that's why logically we're thinking, no, there has to be many sources, because in the material world, that's how it would work. But in the spiritual platform, it doesn't work like that. Everything comes from Krishna because it's all reconciled. And it's not illogical to say that God has inconceivable potencies. That's why he's God, and that's why we're not. Right? No logician can say, oh, you can't say that, that's not logical, but that's the definition of God. So what's the problem? Right? So therefore, achintya beda beda tattva. Right? Inconceivably and simultaneously one and different. While in the material world, it's based on temporary duality. Does that make sense?
Yes, thank you so much for considering my question from so many angles. Hare Krishna.
Okay. So are you convinced? Are you agreeing to the monotheistic principle of religion?
Yes. Okay, I was good. Mostly considering how other people might object me when I explain to them these things. That's why I asked this question.
Ah, okay. Some other questions?
Yes, ma'am. This question is from Navika Krishnamatiji. She is asking whether a mental or a bodily disturbance is a big obstacle in coming to Krishna consciousness.
So since Krishna consciousness means the soul, which is spiritual, is absorbed in Krishna, who is the Supreme Spirit, then there is no obstacle. Right? Means obstacle means it's coming up because we're identifying with it. But if we don't identify with it, then what's the problem? You know, like, let's say down on the corner, that vegetable walla who has the cart with potatoes on it, if today he doesn't show up, is it the end of the world? You can't do devotional service. So the point is that if we don't identify with these things, then how will they stop us being involved in devotional service? That's why there's 9 processes of devotional service. So, you know, we can always, one of them we can always be engaged in. Does that make sense? Yeah?
Thank you. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Jai Ho. Hare Krishna. You know, in other words, what things work well, easier for us or well for us, that's what we do. Like you see, Sukadev Goswami and Parikit Maharaj are sitting down on the bank of the Ganga, right? And they're hearing and chanting. They're not doing elaborate deity worship. Like Prahlad Maharaj, then he's remembering Krishna. Does that make sense? Akrura is offering prayers, all these different personalities. They're doing a specific activity. So what is available that you can do and you're comfortable with and be, that's what, then you absorb yourself. It may be different from someone else, but you're able to absorb yourself and be involved. Does that make sense? Okay. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you, Maharaj. Chandramala Mataji has a question. How can we always remember Krishna and who we are, especially when our emotions seem to be out of control? This is the first question.
Because we remain who we are and Krishna remains who he is, no matter what the situation. Yeah, so there's no problem because we don't change, Krishna doesn't change. We may change our consciousness, and that's a problem. Right? But if we adjust the consciousness to be connected to Krishna, then the various situations around us and all that don't really matter. We see in Nectar Devotion that all that wide range of emotions is all engaged by the devotees in the Lord's service. So there's never actually a problem. It's just that we identify with the situations that cause these emotional problems, therefore we think that it's us, that's why there seems to be an obstacle. But being the soul, there's no problem. Now this takes practice, but the solution is very simple, right? So the solution is always simple because it's always about Krishna. But for us, depending upon our particular situation we're in and identity, then it will take some practice to overcome that particular obstacle. So, therefore, we try, it means, so the process of education, the first stage is we hear, right? It's a scientific process, but of the processes, the hearing is the most important technical aspect. Then hearing these things, we try to remove doubts. Right? Because the second stage is to apply that, what you've heard. Because if there's doubts in the first stage, you may be confused, you won't have the focus, you don't necessarily understand what to do. So therefore, then, we apply ourselves to removing the doubts so that it's clear to us. And then we can start to apply it. So from applying it, then we get an understanding. From hearing, you don't necessarily get an understanding. If you have a lot of experience in a particular area and someone says, this is how it should be done, then you think of those previous experiences, then you can see, oh, okay. But the main point is it's removing doubt. Because the Vedic concept, it's practical. It's not an academic understanding. It means you actually have an understanding because you're doing it. So the Vedic concept of understanding means you practically can apply it. The modern concept means I understand means I don't have any doubts. And I might think, okay, that's clever, that's a better way to do like this. But unless you can apply it, you don't actually understand. So that's why in the academic field, someone can be a PhD in plumbing, but they can't actually fix the leak in your sink. So that's the thing. The Vedic means it has to be able to be practically applied. The modern academy, it does not have to be practically applied. Just you've collected a certain volume of information from a certain volume of resources, and then now you're the world authority, even though you cannot do it. So that's the weakness in the modern academics or the modern educational system, is it's not actually designed at something practical. So when we say understanding, that means the second stage of education where you're practically applying it, and from practically applying it, you're seeing this is how it works. Then you understand it. I mean, I can remember many times watching someone who's very good at cooking something, right? So they're putting the ghee, they're putting the spices, you know, they're cooking, they're putting in the other ingredients, they're cooking, and it comes out very nice. And I look at that and I go, yeah, that's easy enough. I could do that. But a problem comes up. When I go to apply it, then it's, well, how hot is the ghee? How much spice? How long do you leave it in there? What color do you get? When you put the things, how many times are you doing this and that and all these things? And then you find out you can't cook it. So just by hearing or seeing it, I did not understand because I still have doubts. How hot? How long? What color? What consistency? Right? So therefore, understanding means I can apply it, I can do it. Right? So that means that the second stage means now I apply it, and depending upon the result, now I again analyze it and try to remove any doubts. So again, I go back to the first stage, to what I learned, how is that applying in the second stage? And then going back and forth between this contemplation of what I have learned and the application and trying to make them match, that brings me to the point of understanding. Then when you can apply it consistently, then by doing that, you start to see the importance of it. That creates a value. So value means now it's part of your life. That's how you do things. So that's the third stage of education, means not only can you do it, but you value it. That's why you do it, because you have no doubts. Then the fourth stage is taking others through those first three positions, right? In other words, teaching. You teach others to value it. Because someone values it, they're going to continue no matter what. So we have to see, just because you said doesn't mean it's going to happen. You're not Ramses. You know Ramses? The Egyptian pharaoh?
Yes.
Yeah, he's famous for saying, let it be written, let it be done. So he's going to see that he said it, they understood it, they apply it, it happens. Just because you told somebody, if they don't do it, that means you didn't clear the doubts, you didn't make them, you know, bring them to the point where they want to apply this. Does that make sense? So it's not enough to say, oh, they weren't sincere, right? Krishna's satya sankalpa, he says something, it happens. Krishna, we say so many things, what happens? Yeah, so that's the whole point. Is when, therefore, then one has to see is that analyzing what's there, practicing that, that becomes habit. And when it becomes habit, then after a while, it'll become value. So that's how you overcome all these difficulties, is you have to first understand why you're doing it, be clear about that, and then keep practicing it till you can do it. And by regularly doing, then you'll start to see the value of it. Yes, okay. Yeah. Okay. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. There's one more question from Nandita Mataji. Normally, I have a busy schedule consisting of japa, sadhana, and listening to your lectures. In between, I do daily calls, and I'm not much affected by what's going on around me. I observe and register and process and go on with what I'm doing. At the present, for various reasons, I had to slow down my daily routine, and I can only do japa. What attracts my attention is I am affected more with what's going on around me. What can I do to stop this? Shall I chant more?
You could start by possibly closing the curtains. Then you'll be less affected by what's going on around you. Or be less on social media. So it means we always have to contemplate why we're doing what we're doing. It means what's the value of it? And so that's why we're engaged in our japa and other aspects of sadhana. And by the various chores, that's how then, you know, we maintain ourselves. So these are all part of just, you know, how you say, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says they're, you know, they're ornaments on the soul that you have certain qualities, certain things you can do, you know, all these different things. But the point is we have to understand the real body on which the ornaments are placed is the relationship between the living entity and Krishna based on devotion. Right? Does that make sense? So the point being is that knowing what we should do and the other aspects that we're engaging in Krishna service, in other words, the sadhana is your direct activities of devotional service, and the chores and all that can be indirect activities. Means because you're engaging in Krishna's service, therefore they take on the devotional quality. So then they're non-different, but still you have to engage them. While chanting japa, whether you're remembering Krishna or not, it's still Krishna. Right? Taking prasadam, it's still Krishna, whether you're remembering or not. But if you are remembering your various activities in context of how they have a connection to serving Krishna, even though it may be indirect, they take on the same quality,
and
same spiritual quality. Right? Krishna is absolute. Yes? No? Okay, very good. Hare Krishna. So you just see what you can do and do your best. That's what you can do. And other things that are not so important, then you decide how much you'll be involved in those things or not.
So Chandramala Mataji had a second question. To be able to get rid of our anarthas, is it enough to have a good sadhana and an association? Or do we also need to endeavor separately and in a more specific way?
No, the specific way is the interest to get rid of them. In other words, by chanting and doing these activities in the association of devotees, the heart becomes purified, the anarthas are removed. But at the same time is, if we're aware that you want to give up these things, they go away quicker, right? Because we are dealing with free will. So anarthas are in the heart because we were comfortable with them being there. We had the focus and determination to be involved in that anartha. And so therefore then, for in that anartha going away completely, it has to be that you're comfortable with that. So that's what Maya does. We say, I don't want this. And then Maya says, are you sure? You always liked this so much and all that. And, you know, what about this situation or that situation? And then when we say, keep saying no, then she goes, okay. Does that make sense?
Sambhuj Mataji has a question, and she is asking if she has understood it rightly, the quality of prasadam is depending on the consciousness of the person who is cooking it, and how we are taking this prasadam, and also depending also on who is distributing the prasadam. Is there such a knowledge, and if there is, how we should understand this, like how is it affecting the consciousness in a different way, if different people are distributing or cooking it and serving it?
The point is if you're Krishna conscious, then what's why will there be any effect? Right? But if someone is, let's say their mentality is not so good, they'll create a bad atmosphere and you may be affected by that. So that's what we're looking at. Right? Otherwise the holy name is Krishna, Prasadam is Krishna, the Vaishnavas, then they're, you know, important, dear to Krishna, the deity is Krishna, the holy Dham is Krishna, so the consciousness of you or others around you, that can have an effect, but it doesn't mean it affects the deity. It's not that I make the prasadam. I worship the deity with such devotion, therefore the deity is there and everyone gets the benefit. But if I'm spaced out, then the deity is not really there and so no one gets the benefit. We're not the one in control of these direct activities. Right? If somebody's doing something under proper authority, then what's the problem? It's not that, oh, this person cooks, so it's not so much prasadam. But I cooked, it's fabulous prasadam. Yes? No?
So her question was more specifically about the person who is distributing the prasadam. What kind of effect can the consciousness of the distributor have on the people taking the prasadam?
I mean, so if they're wanting to serve the Vaishnavas and they're serving appropriately, then it enhances the atmosphere. But if they don't want to serve, then it's always going to be a problem. So that's generally why you have more advanced devotees cooking, more advanced devotees offering, and more advanced devotees serving prasad. Everyone can take prasad. Does that make sense? It means we have the tendency, the newest people have them serve prasad. But the tradition is the senior people serve prasad. Because more advanced devotees, they appreciate what is prasad, they appreciate Vaishnava association, they have experience in how to serve prasad, what is the great mentality, and so therefore it creates a nicer environment. Yes? Okay.
Gandavati Mataji has a question. It is about the how the anarthas are coming into our lives. Like how, what is the process of the anarthas being like existing? In the beginning, as we were the marginal energies, we were in a more neutral position about serving to Krishna, and we were carrying the seed of this material enjoyment. And because of our ignorance and because of lack of association, we decided to, we choose to think of the material enjoyment. And after this, Maya was covering us and we came into the material existence and we got the anarthas. How can we choose Krishna's service when we are in the marginal energy, and how we can go directly to spiritual world? From where comes this knowledge and association, which will be helping us to decide?
So the basic principle is that the living entity is one of the energies of Krishna. Right? And they're the marginal potency, means they're very small. The jivas, they're very, very small. Just like Krishna is the biggest, then you also have the smallest. So we are the smallest. Rather than we are the champions, we are the smallest. So then the point comes up is then as marginal potency, there's that principle that one can choose between functioning in the natural position under the spiritual potency or functioning not in a natural position under the external energy, right? So the living entity, at Krishna being transcendental and having a spiritual body made of, eternity, knowledge, and bliss. The living entity also has a spiritual body, and their nature is eternity, knowledge, and bliss. So we're small, Krishna's unlimited. So then the living entity, by having an idea of looking at Satchitananda, instead of seeing it in context of Krishna, they see this Satchitananda in context of themselves only. So then they're looking at Krishna's energy and the knowledge and activities without Krishna. So at that point, you're already under the control of the material energy. It means you're under the external energy. It means because you have to work under one or the other. So one may say, how can you be on the spiritual platform and be in material consciousness? Let's take the Keshi demon, for example. He's there in Vrindavan. It's the spiritual world. But if we analyze carefully, we'll see he's not in spiritual consciousness. So he's under the control of Mahamaya. But all the cowherd boys that are there at that time, they're all under the control of Yogamaya because they're absorbed in Krishna and see the whole situation in the context of Krishna. But we see that the cowherd, that means the Keshi demon, he's seeing things in context of himself, you know, due to his own pride, that he's doing this, he's doing that, he's a big demon, he's going to kill Krishna. And so it's not about understanding Krishna, who he is, and so he's in illusion. So as soon as you don't consider Krishna as part of the perspective, then one is under the control of the avidya shakti. And if you're considering Krishna, then you're under the control of the vidya shakti. Does that make sense? So then it's just a matter of now the consciousness becoming polluted, so therefore then we get the subtle body, and then that produces the gross body according to our actions. And like that, then we stay in the cycle of birth and death. Does that make sense?
She's here. She's nodding her head.
Yeah?
Yes.
Okay, very good.
Inabandhu Prabhu has a question. As a grihastha, how we should be relating to our relatives? I'm not having much relationship with my relatives as they are trying to control me in a very excessive way, and as they are trying to guide me or direct me into their lifestyles, and as they are not accepting the lifestyle that I've taken, I've chosen, so I'm not having much relationship with them. And is it my dharma or duty to continue my relationship with them independent of what they are thinking of me or how they are behaving me?
The main point is that for the living entity, they're naturally servant of Krishna. And human life is meant for elevating oneself in Krishna consciousness. It's the one opportunity we have. Because otherwise, all the other species of life, then they're not inclined towards spiritual elevation. They're just interested in eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. So that is the actual duty of the living entity, right? So that's, you always have to see everything in that context. How to be Krishna conscious. Right, so if one's relatives are favorable to this and that, then they can be more involved. And if they're not favorable, then to that degree that they, may or may not create any obstacle, then that way you keep them more close or less close. But that should be seen in the context that the duty applied here is the etiquette of dealing properly, nicely. It means you'll deal nicely, right? And in that dealing, then you'll see things as they are. So then how much you can deal nicely that things run smoothly, you deal that much. No? You know, it means you may be able to talk to them regularly or more weekly or monthly, or only call them on Maharama, you know. So whatever works. Send them some dried fruit, you know. Wish them a happy Eid, and leave it at that. Point is that one's supposed to be Krishna conscious. Family should be also, that's their duty, right? It says don't become a parent if you can't make your dependents Krishna conscious. So if they're not doing that, that doesn't mean you shouldn't do yours. But you should always behave nicely. They're your parents, right? You know, to perform service, you need a body. They gave you that body. They took care until now you were able to, you know, do things on your own. So that much should be appreciated. But it doesn't mean you give up Krishna consciousness because that's what they want. By being Krishna conscious, they also get benefit. So not only them, you know, the grandparents, you know, like that, then in previous life, those, you know, the parents, grandparents, like this. So then all these, and then in the, all these get benefit. Yeah. And if they ask why you don't come around, you know, why you're avoiding your parents and all that, he says, it's just a matter of, is it about personal interaction or is it about you just telling me what you think I should do and how I'm an idiot for not doing that? I mean, how many times do you have to say it? It's pretty obvious, you know. So if that's the conversation, we've already had that conversation, so there's no more need of me coming over to the house because you're going to tell me something you've already told me. And I understand that's what you're trying to tell me, so why should I come over again? Now, if you want to have something about what you did today or what I did today and, you know, talk about, you know, Aunt Tessie or whatever it is like that, you know, then these things you can do. That you can have. But if it's always just going to be, you know, why is that this? You know, we spent all this money, we did all this and that. It says, hey, maybe I'll write it down on a piece of paper, I'll stick it on the wall, I'll look at it every day. You know, but, you know, what's the need for you to say all these things? Right? Now, it means I'm not so sure about this, but let us say on the, how you say, I'm not sure what you call it, but that on the judgment day, isn't everybody judged on their own merit? So that means then the individual, by their actions, then they're going to get the results. Like that. So everyone's an individual. So now that you're an individual as an adult, therefore, then you're going to take responsibility for that development. I've never heard that they call out the family name and then everybody from the family comes forward. No?
No.
You know, it never says there'll be green embroidered couches for everybody. It just talks about if you get any green embroidered couches or not.
What is this, Marat? In couches?
Embroidered? Mm-hmm. Couch. Sofa, seat.
Yeah, okay.
No? Yeah, so then don't worry about it. The purpose is to develop love for God. That's religion. And what the parents are talking about is simply how to make a buck. Buck. Make a euro.
Buck, yeah. Money.
Make a, you know, whatever it is that you call it over there. Right? So they're not talking about how to develop love for God. Because even if they're saying, well, you have your own religion, so would they be happy if, you know, again, you shaved your head, grew a big beard, and went to Mecca and never came back? Would they be happy with that? You have the Dharavesh there, no?
Dharavesh,
yes.
Yeah, so then, you know, you'll go be a Dharavesh, you know? Then you get to wear the hat also, you know? So they'll be cool with that. So then they're not worried about if you develop love for God. They're just worried about you make money and have babies and then they have grandchildren and that's all they care about. So therefore, then the point is you have to be God conscious. So therefore, you take care of yourself, you have a family, there are children, but it doesn't mean that we're not God conscious while we're doing that. And they should be happy because as being Krishna conscious, it's non-militant. Because if they say, no, but you have your own religion, great. Now, someone following is strictly their the own religion. What would be their position with your parents? Aren't there wars going on in the eastern part of the country based on all this? You know, these are points of reality. You know, so therefore, as a devotee, you know, we'll call them up, we'll talk to them, we'll come visit them sometime. But if you actually followed the local religion and followed it as strictly as we're following it, there's a good chance your parents might get their head cut off. No?
Yeah.
Right? I mean, just see in India, you have all the different branches and this and that, and they may not like each other, but they don't bother each other. No? So therefore, they should just be happy. And this devotee who's asking the question, do they have children yet or not? Yes. So now they're grumpy. As soon as there's grandchildren, then you'll see they're willing to accommodate. Suddenly your mom will become nice. And if they try to say anything and no, you got to do it, then you just say, okay, it's fine. We're happy being with the children. You don't have to see them. You want to see them? Be nice. Don't try to feed them non-vegetarian food because they're your children, not theirs. So therefore, then if they feed them non-vegetarian food, hey, we're not coming over. That's reality, you know?
Yeah.
Does that make sense? So we are clear here?
Yes, Maharaj.
Thank you. We don't need to get more grumpy about this. Because otherwise, if you check, your parents, then they have what? 10 brothers and 10 sisters? Are they all living in the same neighborhood? They all talk to each other, right? They all have great relationships. Each one of them is happy with what the other's doing. So then relax. Yeah? Okay. But you have to say all this stuff nicely, pleasantly. Using proper words, proper etiquette, proper tone.
Maharaj, we have 4 more questions.
Just
to inform
you. Gaurakram Mataji has a question. When we read the Vedic literatures, we see that even very advanced devotees or like sages or yogis who have done very long tapasyas, and very advanced people, they also might get controlled by anger and they start cursing each other. And I have heard that if somebody is cursing another person, then he is giving all his actions, spending all the good deeds, all the good merit which he has acquired through his hard tapasyas. And some of these even good deeds are going to the person who he has cursed.
Yes, so don't curse. Don't curse, not good. So that's why you see is that then Prabhupada points out is that the difference between the devotees and these, you know, non-devotee great sages. Right? So even though they're very advanced in their knowledge and austerity, still to control anger, that is something that the devotees are able to do because they're doing things for Krishna. While the sage, they have their own agenda. It may be in the mode of goodness, it may be very advanced, but it's still not about Krishna.
Thank you, Mind.
Okay.
So Bahamasiji has a question. Krishna is giving a lot of things, but at the same time, he might also take a lot of things away from us. And sometimes we feel very hurted. And I'm not complaining about this, but I would like to understand the reason for this. For example, our health or sometimes... a pet that we loved a lot is being taken away from us, and I have difficulty in understanding this. There was the pet,
and what was the other one before the pet?
Health.
Health. Oh, I thought you said hat, and I was thinking, okay, hats and pets. Okay.
Sorry for pronunciation.
Health. No. It's fine. Health and pets. Okay.
Yes, and sometimes I have difficulty in understanding this. Is it a lesson for us or is it a warning?
Okay, well, let's look at the material situation. Birth, death, old age, and disease. So all of these are not considered comfortable. And the death rate in the material world is 100%. Means if Alexander can die, everybody can die. So the whole point is that why is one surprised that they go away? How long does a pet last? Unless you have a pet turtle, you know, from the Galapagos. Then they last 300-400 years. Then they'll stay, you'll go. But all other pets, unless it's an elephant, okay, they may last 60 years. They're all going to die. Cats, dogs, they're good for like 10, 12 years. Why are we surprised? And if we're into a pet parakeet or a goldfish, even shorter. Right? So material world means everything's temporary. The spiritual world means everything's eternal. So the problem comes from being in the material world. The problem is not, why is Krishna doing this? The problem is, why did you come here? Why are you staying here? You come here, you've seen it doesn't work very good, then don't stick around. Go back to Godhead. The material world will never be perfect, right? Means you can get things that, they're, Prabhupada says, comfortable means they're not uncomfortable. You can actually never make things nice. You can make it so it doesn't bother you. What is happiness? Removing a pain. It's not positive, right? We've given up the positive happiness of the spiritual platform and accepted this removal of negative as happiness. I'm hungry. I eat something. I get rid of the hunger. I'm happy. I'm sleepy. I take a nap, I'm happy. There's no positive happiness. It's just removal of pain, that's happiness. So, you know, why are we surprised? Right? So that's the difficulties. That's, one has to know what you're dealing with, where you are. And the body you have, the situation you're in, the facilities you have, that is just the results of your previous action. So if it's not good, who's to blame? And so, therefore, we absorb ourselves in doing service to Krishna. And then doing that service, we're doing that to please Krishna. And Krishna being pleased, that's our happiness. Therefore, if things don't go so well, what can you do? That's just the way it is. And if we're able to engage in service, have the association of Vaishnavas, things aren't so uncomfortable, it's all by Krishna's grace. We're not approaching Krishna so our material situation is better. We're approaching Krishna so we wrap up the material situation and go to the spiritual world. Is that okay?
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Maharaj.
Okay. Okay. Thank you. Hare Krishna.
So there's a question from Satvik Prabhu, his second question.
Okay.
Could you please elaborate a little bit on the concept of personality in the Vedic thought process, in the Vedic understanding? For example, when we are talking about the Ganga, Mother Ganga, Ganga River, we are learning about Ganga Devi. And we see also the person, Vedas personified as personality. And there are many examples like this. How we should understand this?
The point is, Krishna is a person. Therefore, everything expanding from him is personal. That's how it works. He's an individual. The energies that expand are individuals. It's called, in the philosophy, that's called Satkaryavad, which means that the effect is inherent in the cause. The example is the clay pot is inherent in the lump of clay. It's just not manifest. But when it manifests, it does, because clay has the nature to be made into pots. You can't get a pot if clay can't make pots. So that means everything's personal. Then they may have particular duties, and that as devatas, then they have their particular areas of service. And so then they have other aspects in which they perform those services. Let's say, just for example, a man owns a business. So if you go to that shop, that's his shop. It's a manifestation of his potency. You can't say it's not his shop or it's. And you go to a particular shop because you like how somebody deals.
This is
as a person. No? So therefore, the place itself, the workers, how it's laid out, the methods that they use, these are all coming from the person who owns the business. Does that make sense? So therefore, everything's personal. Okay? Yeah? Okay.
Thank you. Can we ask a last question, Maharaj?
Yes, last question.
Okay. This is a question from same Mataji who asked about many sources.
Many?
Many sources.
Forces.
No, many.
Oh, okay. Yes.
I hear that there is a well-established debating tradition in our line. I often feel I don't know how to discuss things, and I want to develop this ability in line with our tradition. What can I do?
Okay, nice. So chanting comes from hearing, right? You hear nicely, then you can speak nicely. So then regularly, you know, be hearing, you know, reading the books, seeing the conversations that are going on, the points being made. Right? You know, see Prabhupada's conversations or lectures. And then you see the points being made. Remember, is that the Vedic system is it's a descending process of knowledge. So, being deductive, it's very simple. Right? There's Krishna. Right? Then from there, it starts to expand. You know, Krishna is one. Everything's Him. But Krishna's energy are non-different. There you have two. Right? Krishna is Satchidananda. Therefore you have three. Right? So you get the Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana. So like that it expands. So details always go back to the principle. If you keep the principle in mind, then you can discuss it. If it's a matter of memorizing detail, then if you have a really good, you know, if you're Sheldon, then you're doing okay. But if you're not, then you have a problem. Because if you understand the principle, then you can apply it. If you don't understand the principle, then that's where the difficulty comes. Does that make sense? So the deductive process is more effective than the inductive. The inductive is you just get enough knowledge, then you'll know everything. But that only works in Star Trek. Right? Because you see other people who try to know everything in the universe and get that benediction from the aliens, you always see their head explodes, every time. Therefore, you try to understand Krishna and the knowledge as given by the acharyas, understand the principle. Then as you practice and understand, then the detail will become more and more. But if the principle is in place, you can always apply it. Okay? Descending, not ascending. Don't let your head explode.
So to summarize, the point is that when we read Srila Prabhupada's books and Acharya's books, then we get the principle, and only then it makes sense to discuss details. But that's where we should focus right now.
Yes, so how much, just like we know, Krishna's God, we're not the body, we're the soul. The process to, it means then through the process of devotional service, we can know Krishna. The main process is chanting Hare Krishna, and the main result is that of developing love of God. That's principles. Based on that, now you give as much detail as you understand. Okay? Yeah, because even if you understand the principle, you can explain it. And to understand these principles, you have to see the works of the acharyas through Prabhupada's teachings. He's saying what they're saying in simple language. But he's not giving any less, elements of the philosophy than they are. He's not necessarily always using the Sanskrit terms. If you like the Sanskrit terms, then you listen to the lectures Prabhupada gave. It means you just pay attention in Prabhupada's books. You'll see they're there. And the lectures from 66, 67, 68, you'll see he uses a lot of the technical terms. But it's not that later after that he doesn't discuss the points. He just discusses them using simpler English so that, you know, how you say, those with not a background in this kind of level of stuff can understand. Srila Prabhupada is just making the most advanced philosophy accessible. One has to remember, at the time of Jiva Goswami, they actually talked in Sanskrit. So it's not that they're saying any more philosophical points, they're just saying it in Sanskrit. Yes? Okay, very good. Hare Krishna.
Thank you very much, Maharaj.
Okay.
For wonderful explanations, wonderful lecture, wonderful association. And okay, we are praying one day you physically come to Turkey.
Acha. Yeah, we'll see. I mean, right now, no one's going anywhere, so yes. It's...
Yeah, that's true.
Okay, very good. Very nice. Nice questions, nice discussions. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Çok güzel, çok güzel sorular. Teşekkürler.
Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jai!
Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki.
Jai
Nitai Gaur Premanandi.
Hare Hare Bol.
Please Bhaktivedya Purnaswami Maharaj ki.
Jai.